Good evening. Good evening. All right. Just want to make sure you're there. I'm going to go ahead and have the team from Kenya come on up. Then we can grab a stool. We're going to play musical chairs this evening. As they are kind of getting situated, I think what I want to do is to kind of preface the comments that they're going to make here in a minute by directing our attention back to Advent Conspiracy. Kim mentioned AC as designating some of the activities that are going on. And if you've not been around with us for the last couple of years, you may not know what that is. And just want to draw the connection in and then really turn it over to the team. But about 3 years ago, in 2007, I think that there were some of us on staff as we started to talk about Advent and the coming of Advent. One of the things we were realizing, and as we were talking about it, it just seemed like Advent had become, in as much as everything else gets this way, it just become this commercialized way of leading into Christmas and celebrating Christmas. And even more to the point, it just became this kind of harried, frenzied time. We would make our shopping lists, and we'd have to go to parties, and you were kind of fighting crowds. And in the midst of all that, it seemed like we were forgetting what the whole season was about. And if you go to the Advent Conspiracy website, it's adventconspiracy.org, one of the taglines that they use a lot is that Christmas can still change the world. And about the time that we were having the conversations on staff, there were another group of folks that said, let's make Advent significant again. And so it became kind of this national thing that folks would just join. And excuse me. And we thought that we would lend ourselves to that. And the idea really is that Christmas is about welcoming Christ into our midst. And if we're going to do that, then we need to make space. And if we're going to make space, then one of the things that we can do during Advent is to give our presence, E-N-C-E, rather than presence, E-N-T-S. And if we were going to give, if you're going to give money or direct your giving, that rather than buying another gift that might have to get returned or that someone else can't use, what if we were to direct our giving in such a way that folks would get things that they needed, i.e. fresh water? Clean water is a significant thing. Well, as we started to settle on the fact that this made sense, it made sense for the fact that Jacob's well might go about giving fresh water, digging wells. We didn't know who we would do that with. We obviously knew that there were people that needed it, but we didn't have any personal connections. And this is about the time that Pastor Edward came into the picture, and he's going to tell the story in a minute in a way that much better than I can. But all of that to say that this year we're doing Advent Conspiracy again. The night of preparation is the Friday right after Thanksgiving, and then Sunday after that, is the first Sunday of Advent. And what we want to do, again, is just to remember that Advent is about welcoming Christ into our midst, and hence, then thinking about things and making space and making room in the ways that Christ might direct us. And so we will be talking more about that. You will be hearing more about it. Next week, we'll talk a little more fully about what we'll do with our funds and those kinds of things. But just as a by way of introduction. So let me kind of step over here now and introduce our team. This is our team that went to Kenya. Pastor Edward Simiyu, he was with us a couple months ago, actually early in the fall. And Pastor Edward is the pastor of City Harvest Church in Kenya. And we have partnered with them on, he's the one that made the connection with us to Pokot, those sorts of things. He's actually in the States for the fall. He's down in Waco. So he traveled from Waco and met our team in Kenya and then took us around and then came back and then has so graciously actually flown back up here to be with us today. And then the team from Jacob's Well that went, just so you know, this is Nate Jackson. Nate has some experience with international aid, USAID, and so he went there with that's part of why we sent him, is so he could kind of take a look at some of the things we're doing. Julie Abendroth is an agriculturalist, so as I understand it, just spent a lot of times playing in the dirt while she was there. So, and then Holly McKinney is a nurse, and one of the things we wanted to see and we thought might be a need are there might be some medical needs there, and so Holly was representing us in that way. And then Laura Lesneski is an architect, but also has been to Pocat before, the first time she was there, and she's one of our elders. So this is the team that went. They got back a week ago Saturday, and just so you all know, I mean, it's a 9-hour time difference, and so this past week has been their adjustment back, and I said this, and I just have to say it again, Laura got back on Saturday. She was actually on church on Sunday, which was just crazy, and then she was in an elders meeting with me on Monday, but not gonna lie, she was asleep. Her eyes were open, but she was asleep. Like, we would ask her some questions, and she voted, like, on all kinds of stuff, and it was always a yes vote. But anyway, so actually, it's really, I'm really appreciative of the fact that they've been with us in all three gatherings and to share a little bit about what's going on. So, Pastor Edward, I think I'm going to start this way, is to just ask you, so I gave a brief introduction from our end, how we got involved with Advent Conspiracy, and then specifically the whole idea of Wells. Will you tell us how the connection was made with Pocat, and then how then that connection was made to Jacob's Well?
Thank you. It's a great blessing to be back to Jacob's Well again, and particularly to thank you for sending the team over to Kenya to be with us. Like you can see, they came back intact. So we fed them on organic food, so you can please send them back again. And you can also come back and, you know, be with us in Kenya. Well, the story of Pocat goes back to 2006, 2007. And I must say that God was at work in your church in a different way, and he was also at work in us back in Africa in another different way altogether. And it was divine that this connection happened at the end of 2007, when we all didn't know that this is how he was working it out. I had been invited by churches in Uganda. Uganda is a neighboring country on the western side of Kenya, to help them grapple with four issues. They were considering how they can effectively tackle HIV/AIDS, providing basic education, particularly to people who are displaced in camps and, you know, because of the rebel movement that was happening up in northern Uganda, and also to discuss on issues of peace, particularly in areas that were prone to conflict. And one of those areas was on the border between Kenya and Uganda, where the Pocat live. And the cause of conflict was because the Pocats would enter Uganda, raid and take away cattle and destroy villages and then sneak back to Kenya. And because of the, you know, free proliferation of arms, they now use arms and guns to raid the villages and, you know, take away a lot of cattle. The fourth issue was to do with evangelism. And so as the conversation was going on in these forums with the churches in Uganda, when we started talking about peace, they raised the Pocat as a major issue in terms of the conflict they were having along the border. But I remember coming up and telling them, no, we can't discuss about the Pocat because, as far as I know, the Pocat are in Kenya. And so we cannot discuss on people who are not in the forum because this was basically a Ugandan issue. And so they told me, no, if we can't discuss about the Pocat, then, you know, this forum is not going to help us at all. So we might as well just talk about it or, you know, we leave. So I had to listen to what they had, and they, you know, they shared very, very sad things about how the Pocats would raid, kill so many of their people, and then take away their livestock. By the way, if you didn't know who the Pocats are, they are nomadic pastoralists, and cattle is very central in their lives, and so that's why they would do that. And the terrain where they live in Kenya is very dry. And so every year they have this persistent drought that really destroys everything that they have. And so they have to move with their animals from place to place. And it happens that Uganda is a bit greener, so you have more pasture in Uganda and some bit of water spots in some places. And so they would get into Uganda to access the pasture and also the watering points, and in the process raid for cattle. and then come back to Kenya. So that was the main cause. And so as I listened to this, my question, I was thinking through myself and I was asking, but what can I do about the Pokot, you know? Or what can we even do? Because this is an issue that the Kenyan government had been struggling for long, for many years, to try and tackle, to stop the cattle raiding. By the way, the Pokots don't just raid in Uganda. They also do that with some tribes in Kenya. So they are known to be a troublesome people. It's almost like a small band of terrorists who are just problematic. In some years back, I think in the 80s, the government of Kenya established an anti-stock theft unit within the police force to tackle this menace of cattle raid. But a couple of years later, the police unit died, but the raiding still continue up to now. And so they had defeated the government, you know, they were just basically uncontrollable and they could not be tamed at all. So these are the people we were talking about. And so here we are as a church and we're asking ourselves, what can we do? So in the process of our conversations, we thought, why don't we invite some of the Pokot leaders to come and sit in and listen to what the churches in Uganda were saying. And so we invited a warrior, a very feared and respected warrior, who came from Pokot and attended one of the forums. So he came over to Kampala. And that was his first time to be out of his country, Pokot country, so to speak, and enter into what you would consider to be modern civilization. So when this man came to Kampala, it was his first time to see high-rise buildings, and it was first time to see people, you know, a city. Back in Africa, people, you know, are everywhere in the streets. It's not like here where you drive down the streets and there are no people. In Africa, people are everywhere. And so this man was shocked, and he was asking, you know, are these buildings made by God or by man? Because in Pokot, there are no buildings. And then he would ask, is it because we kill each other so much that we are not as many as you people are in here in the city? And we would say, yes, you know. So basically, he was asking all these questions, and, you know, we would then guide him to find the answers. And in the forum, after being in the forum and listening to these things for 5 days, and through the worship and the word that we would share in these meetings, this man gave his life to the Lord, and he became a Christian. He actually took on the name Stephen, which is the name that my colleague who had organized this forum is called. He's called Stephen. So he went back to Pokot, and as it is cultural, whenever they have their leader come back, they always want to receive reports of what happened or where, you know, from where this man came from, this far country kind of story. And so the community gathered, and the first thing he told them is that they should stop raiding and stop killing people. And that shocked everybody, because everybody knew him as a warrior. And in Pokot, to be a warrior, you must have killed many people, and you must have raided for so much cattle. So it was very confusing for them to listen to him say the things that they respected him for. And so he had a struggle to try and, you know, convince his people. He was bringing in a worldview that they have never known, never had. And so in the process of time, I went back to Nairobi, and I was also thinking of and praying, what can we do for the Pokot? Because we're just a small church and we don't have resources. We have no capacity to do what the governments had failed. And so in the course of time, we felt, why don't we have a similar experience for some key Pokot leaders to come and experience what this man had experienced. And so what we did, I reflected on it, and I realized that many people had actually tried to enter Pokot. You know, we have had missionaries who did attempt that about 10 years ago, and they got killed. And the government basically wasn't operating in the area. And so, you know, a thought came to me, and I felt the Lord saying, you know, everybody tries to go in. Why don't you bring them out instead of you trying to go in and maybe get killed? So it was in that process that we thought, let's bring them out and have them experience this similar experience that the warrior had. And so we invited this warrior to ask, you know, to look around for 14 key warriors like him from the community to come to Nairobi. But eventually, the day they were arriving, they came 18 of them. So we had to frantically get them accommodated. And we stayed with them for 5 days in Nairobi, gave them a similar experience, and basically allow them to just see and then ask questions and then reflect and help them process the things they were processing. I remember one of the experiences they had was we took them in a building, a high-rise building, where they went up to 9th floor in a lift. They had never seen anything like that before. And in this group of 18, they had their own local prophet. They also have prophets, by the way. So as they got onto the 9th floor, this man was struck and he couldn't say anything for the whole weekend. And on Sunday, when we gave them an opportunity to share what their experience was in church, their prophet stood up and said, I went into this building and they put me in a box that took me up. And when I got up, I saw the beauty of the country. And I asked myself, how do people light a fire up here in the sky? Because to them, they know lighting a fire, you light it in dirt. But what do you do when you are up in the air? Where is your base for putting firewood and charcoal and stone? So he was struggling to understand how people light a fire on 9th floor. And I'd never even thought of that, but I could see he made sense, and I started thinking about those issues as well. So that's how Pokot is, that these people have never encountered sort of the civilization that you and I have experienced. And when they had this experience, we also allowed them to meet the Maasais. The Maasais also had, they lived in a similar terrain. They were only 50 kilometers away from Nairobi, but God had really worked among the Maasai, because a couple of years back, an agency that I worked for, a Christian agency, had, gone to the Maasai country and helped them access water. And the water had totally transformed the whole community. The community had established, a sense of settlement along the water points. The schools had started, and churches and marketplaces had been established. And so people are not traveling far to look for water. And that was such an experience for the Maasai. So when the Pokot visited this community, the first thing they asked them is, who do you fight with? Who are your enemies here? And the Maasais were telling them, no, we don't have enemies. We don't even fight anymore. We used to fight many years back, but we stopped that. And so that was shocking for the Pokot, because that's what they live doing every now and then. And so after that experience, they went back to their, guest house, and then they called me. They were so animated the whole night, they actually never slept. So the following morning, they asked me, Pastor, how can you help us experience the same? And that was how we went into Pokot. So we went to Pokot at their invitation. The first thing they told us is, Pastor, how can you help us get water? And I thought to myself, I've never done anything to do with water. I'm just a preacher. But then we started working on raising some money to see if we could do one well. It turned out to be such a difficult experience, very challenging, because we had a budget of about 10,000, then it doubled. And again, so we had to get back to the drawing board to raise more money to do that one well. So after I did that one well, I said, I'll never go back to wells again. Because it had been such an experience, dealing with the drillers and budgets changing. And so everything, we are working with in a new community that we didn't have any experience with, but yet the needs were so immense. And so I remember in 2007, towards the end, I think it was November, when I was visiting Kansas City, Tim Keel, your pastor, came to pick me up in the airport, and I was sharing with him this experience, because it had just happened. So I was so thrilled, so I could share a testimony. And Tim is listening to me, and he starts crying. And then he shares with me that you've been going through an Advent conspiracy, and you're raising money to do wells. And he's like, can we do wells with you? And I started crying. So we are all in the car crying. And then we realized this is how God had been working in your lives, and he's been working in our lives, and now finally he connects us, and we just couldn't hold our tears back. And so the long and short in it was that in the following 5 months, we did 4 wells. So 2008, you know, we had 5 wells in the area. And so the whole community settled down, and the school that had only 60 students now shot up. The population is 343 students because they had water, and the kids could now come to school. The marketplaces that could not happen because bees would go wild because of drought. How many of you knew that actually bees look for water for nectar to make honey? You know, in Pokot, the bees would look for water and nectar, and there is no water, so they go wild in the marketplaces, in schools, they chase away everybody. So there would be no markets, there would even be no schools in some places. But because the wells were there now, and there was spillover water, now the bees were calm, and schools could happen, marketplaces can happen. And so the community has started settling in the area now. And we also want to really thank God because we can now start sharing the gospel. The church is also taking root. We got some portable, you know, audio Bible that we are using that were made for us from Hosanna, which is Faith Comes by Hearing in Albuquerque. And they speak Pokot language. So these people can listen to the gospel, that's the New Testament version, in their own local language. And so we're using that to disciple them and to help start a church in Pokot. And so that's the exciting thing that God has been doing just out of the wells that have been done. Now we have a total of 10 wells. And so that has caught the attention of so many other people, including agencies that and the government that had abandoned the area. So people are coming in to begin working with the community as well. And that has been a great encouragement. Yeah.
Thanks, Pastor Edward. So I'm going to turn the mic over to Laura now. And Laura, you were there the first time we went when we were kind of thinking about this. And so if you could take a few minutes to reflect on the differences between when you went the first time and now and what you see, the difference you've seen that wells make.
Okay, so I'm going to try to describe this scene. It's quite a drive from Nairobi up to the Pokot area, and as we're driving through that area, it's a pretty lush green place. If you've ever seen pictures of Kenya that are just beautiful, we're driving through that as we're getting there, and so it's hard to understand what it is we're about to enter. And we arrived to this place through a highland area. It's lush green, feels really good. And then we start to descend into this, what I've never been to Death Valley, but it feels like you're going into this valley that's like a desert area. And it's a steep climb, but you get to the bottom pretty quickly. In 30 minutes, your world transforms from this greenness to this dryness. And there's just a lot of brush around, and it's really hard to comprehend the change that you've just gone through. When we went there in 2008, there were 6 of us from Jacob's Well, and we were there, I think I counted, for 32 hours, and we almost couldn't stand it anymore because it was so hot, so arid. It was not enough food, not enough water, and we were just sort of, what is this place that we're going to? The driver that we had in 2008, his name was Humphrey. It was his first time going there also. He was from Nairobi, and he was saying, Pat, he was just talking out loud to himself in the van as he's driving. And he's like, Pastor Edward, where are you taking me? Because he was like, what is this place? And then 2 years later, his nephew was our driver, Isaac. And even Isaac was recounting the first time he went down there. He had the same thought in his mind. Pastor Edward, where are you taking us? It's such a different kind of place. When we were going down just this last couple weeks ago, and I was familiar with it by this point, but I looked over at Julie, and she, you know, probably going through this lush farmland area, she was thinking, oh, this is a great place to be. And then we went down, and she just sort of looked at me, and in her face, I could read her saying, where are we? We are now in a desert. Why am I here? This has nothing to do with agriculture. And I admit that the first time that I was there, I was just, I felt like I had such little faith because I just thought there's nothing that can happen in this land. It's just so harsh an environment. I don't know what can happen there. And I was using this analogy of if you've ever biked in a group of people and you sort of can draft off of someone, that I knew it wasn't going to be my faith that was going to be pulling me along in this journey. But if I drafted behind Pastor Edward's faith, then I could get a sense of what might be happening. And so going back this time was pretty phenomenal to see the change that had happened in 2 years. And it all came back to water. So when we arrived this time, there were a lot more kids in the area, as Pastor Edward said. They had smiles on their faces in a way that they didn't have when we were there a couple years ago. They really seemed to be excited that they were in school and part of this community. The adults on the ground, there were more Kenyans on the ground, both from Pokot and from outside of Pokot, that were there either as teachers or trying to help the church grow, and that was very, very encouraging. We were actually invited to a Bible study in one of the compounds, just under the stars, Bible study with these things where a woman from Nairobi would preach in English, it would be translated to Swahili and then translated to Pokot, like right in front of it. So it was just this phenomenal thing. And there was just an incredible sense of hope that I couldn't even begin to imagine 2 years ago. And there it was in front of me. And if I didn't see it for myself, I would have a really hard time believing it. And it did seem to all go back to the wells, and probably God had something to do with that too. But it was water was, you know, amazingly important for this group.
Thanks, Laura. So now I'm just going to ask, so you've heard history and you've heard Laura kind of talk about what happened and what's going on now. Part of the reason why we sent a team there is the folks in Pokot asked us to send a team so that we could dedicate the wells. And so I'm going to turn it over to Holly and Julie. Holly, do you want to talk about maybe first either your experiences around medical issues, maybe the descent down and kind of what you did as she had a particular experience around that. And then Julie will talk about just kind of, if you'll talk a bit about that, what the dedication ceremony was like, how important, I mean, as you viewed it, who was there, those kinds of things. And so Holly.
Yeah, like Laura said, the descent down, it's just a major change, just kind of automatically. And I was kind of on the side, and I looked over, and I couldn't even tell if the tire was still on the road. I felt like we were kind of hanging off, so I switched over to the other side. I was chicken, so. but medically, Edward had given us a list of meds to bring, and they were just your basic type of medicines. But to Pokot, I mean, it was a big deal. It was just Tylenol, antibiotic ointment. And you know, while I was there, you know, different people would come up, and one guy had a toothache, headaches, all different kinds of ailments, and just giving them like one Tylenol, like just changed the world for the next 4 hours. And I just can't imagine, you know, living with that every day. But also, I was woke up one morning with a medical emergency. These two young girls, one of them went unconscious, and she couldn't talk, she couldn't walk. We actually had to carry her into the car and drive to the local hospital. And about 10 minutes into it, I really had like a lightning bolt moment where I was like, they would have had to walk her here. Like they would have had to carry her, like three people, and on these roads that have holes in them. And wow, like, so, and they're just blessed being there. Like we went there to help them, but in so many ways, they impacted my life in ways that I don't know when I'll be able to process it. So yeah.
Very good. Very good. One thing I would add, as was mentioned, the Pokot region of Western Kenya is extremely harsh, extremely remote, and extremely isolated. And when that first day, Holly and I were talking as we got to our village, and I just remarked, isn't it something that God is present even in the most remote of places? And it just really struck me to realize and to see him embodied just by the people that we had already met there, and to see him in the most remote of places, but just really profound. But as Date commented, we attended a well dedication ceremony there, and just to reference, Pastor Edward mentioned a bit about the Pocot people, but that culture, that tribal Pocot culture, while there are many great things about it, there's also some pretty oppressive things for both the girls and the women. Just in that culture, the girls are married at about 10, 11, 12 years of age, and the price of a wife is 30 cattle. As Edward commented, the cow is extremely sacred in their culture. And so once someone accumulated enough cow wealth, they were able to pay the dowry, the price, and it's a polygamous culture. And so just a lot of difficult things. But as a whole, as we were there, and over the course of those couple of days and through the conversations and what we experience, I think all of us can say that what we were witnessing and what we were a part of really felt like something divine and pivotal, transformative, that we were witnessing the beauty and the freedom, both for the girls and the women, but for the Pocot people as a whole, just unfolding before our very eyes. And one example was at the ceremony. This ceremony had hundreds of people attending, community leaders, pastors, individuals from the locations where the wells were at, a lot of the elders and just community members of the Pocot people. It also had government officials. The assistant to the prime minister was there. So just a really profound thing for this community. And at one point, a group of children, the boys and the girls, came and sang several songs. And one of the songs they were singing, in amongst all these Pocot people, they were singing about Jesus. And then they were singing about how to embrace the good, let go of the bad, and embrace education and school and the new culture and all of these practices. And I was so immensely proud of them. I just could not believe how brave they were to sing such a different narrative than what they had been given growing up, and to sing that amongst their whole community. And it was just something really profound. And so to see that all unfolding, it just remarkable. And I thought, how rare is it in life to ever have the opportunity to really see the beauty of Jesus and what he's about unfolding before your very eyes. And so I am just deeply thankful to have been there. One last thing, it was, I felt really honored to be there representing Jacob's Well. And actually was really overwhelmed by it. We were thanked so profusely at each of the well stops when we visited and by so many community leaders that I think all of us, after a while, didn't even know what to say anymore because we were thanked so often. And one thing I did want to relay, when we were talking with one of the head teachers in one of the schools in Uganda, Alfred was a phenomenal, and he is in that area where Invisible Children, if you're aware, that was taking place a couple years ago, but now there's a thriving school, and he made the comment that, with reference to the Jacob's Well Church, that you must be a strong-hearted people, because no one wants to come to the bush. And just how profound of impact it was that we would go to the bush, the most remote of places, and love on them, so really great.
So let me say, just pause here for just a second and say that there is no way, and Holly even mentioned it, that they can kind of download their experiences in the time frame that we have in our gathering. But there's a group here at Jacob's Well called Ubuntu, which is really focused on all things African. The next Ubuntu gathering is going to be on December the 4th. That's a Saturday, 10 o'clock in the morning. They're going to meet up in the Commons area. If you want to hear more from the team that went to Kenya and Pocot, they're going to be, the next Ubuntu gathering is going to be all about that. So if you're interested in this and you want to come hear more, I invite you to do that. It's in your bulletin. I want us to kind of transition now. We've heard about history, and then we've heard about, well, why we went and what's going on right now. And Pastor Edward, if you want to pick up the story now, you have been our main contact, and you're the one who's on the ground, you and your folks at City Harvest. So you have a vision for what's next. And at Jacob's Well, we talk so much about relationships. We don't feel like we're a church that kind of drops money and then goes on to the next thing. What we want to do is continue to be a presence and to find ways to continue to connect to what to the folks in Pocat and what's happening there. What do you think? What are next steps? What do you think needs to happen next? And then after you're done, Nate, you'll just take the mic and then from your perspective see what you think just from your observations about next steps for us.
Thank you. One of the things we are praying for now is that the Lord would help us to help the Pokot Church to begin to take root in that part of the country. We know that it's very easy for us as a city church to, you know, just bring over another, you know, city-clothed church and in skirts and in trousers, in jeans, out in Pokot. And that might not be the kind of church we want to do there. We want God to help us lead and just be of use in his hands to have him incarnate in the community so that, you know, God can be seen in their culture, can be seen in their terrain, which, as you know, it's been described, is a very difficult terrain. And so that's what we are trusting God to do. And this is beginning to happen already. We have a number of them who have come to the faith. Early this year in February, we had over 400 give their lives to the Lord. And so we really have a huge task to disciple them and to help them get to hear the gospel. Now, again, in the midst of this culture, you know, we've got to navigate and help them begin to transition from all that they have known culturally, traditionally, some of the animistic and ancestral worship and you know, make the right direction to receiving Jesus Christ and being discipled to walk in the faith of and in the knowledge of Jesus Christ. So that's a major thing that we would love to partner with you to accomplish. Secondly, we also feel that there is need to develop their own local leaders. Now, there is only one primary school in the area we are working in, and this is the school that we've been working with as well to help develop. It's now stretched. It has 343 kids plus and growing. It goes up to grade 7, but primary schools in Kenya stop at grade 8. We have given them enough iron sheets, so next year they need to put up a classroom to accommodate the next class. But what we've been desiring to do is to build a secondary school. Now, the secondary school will ensure continuity so that when kids finish primary, they can move on to secondary school. And we want to use the secondary school as a forum where we can disciple future leaders who can emerge and serve the church in the community, who can also work as community mobilizers and be really relevant to their own people. Now, you need to understand that with the Pokot, everybody who is in that area or working in that area has come from a different part of the country or from another part of Pokot. Actually, statistics put it that only 1% of the Pokot are literate. But this 1% doesn't come from this area. It comes from the higher lands of Pokot. And so our prayer is that we would see this particular community begin to raise up their own people who can therefore work in the area and be sensitive to the needs of the community, but also be connected with the outside world so that they can really spearhead the transition, or rather the transformation that we've been praying for in the area. And so we are praying for a partnership in those areas. But also we would love to see a base established in the area where, you know, we have some livable facilities, because like the team has said, that place is not just hard for any outsider, it's even hard for us as Kenyans. It's very, very difficult. I find it hard to live in Pokot for 1 week and still be sane, because it's really harsh. It's very, very difficult terrain for anyone who comes from anywhere, unless you are a Pokot yourself. Yeah. So those are the areas that I think we need to. Of course, the needs are immense. You know, we could talk about medical needs. Thankfully, there is a government hospital that is emerging there now, you know, about 15 kilometers away, and that's where they had to drive to. So, you know, the areas, the medical needs are still there, but, you know, so the needs are many. But the focus would be to see the church established and the school, and hopefully the other things can begin to come along as well. Yeah.
Yeah, so one of the things we did while we were there was visit every single well that we drilled, all 10 of them. And, you know, that was just such an overwhelming experience. I mean, the refrain was the same at every well. They were just so grateful and thankful. And we got to see them in action. You know, I mean, they were in constant use. The water was just constantly flowing for the people. And they also had troughs for the livestock. The livestock were using the water. And it was just really amazing to see them in use. And just the stories we heard about, I mean, you know, it's true. Water really is life. I mean, the region's been transformed. I mean, it's secure, it's stable, it's safe for education. Before, the closest water source was at a minimum of 5 miles away. You know, so that's, you had the kids and the women mostly going to get the water. Now they can go to school. Now they don't have to do that. Now the water's right there. A few of the wells are actually on school sites. So it was just amazing. And you know, the gratitude, as I mentioned, was just overwhelming. And the name Jacob's Well is really highly regarded there. I mean, they know us. We're part of their community. It's, you know, we've had an investment of $150,000 over 3 years in these wells, and you know, it's something that we can all be proud of, that we've been a part of, you know, and just it's really, like Julie said, the dedication ceremony, that was a historic moment for that community, and it was just really powerful to see. As far as future involvement, you know, there's obviously the financial side with Advent Conspiracy and donations and that sort of thing. But I think that this church in particular, there's a lot of human capital. There's a lot of creativity here. There's a lot of different ways that people can get involved. Just for instance, the Pocat site, the village we stayed at, Asselong, it's a one laptop per child site, which I don't know if you're familiar with that organization, but they designed these extremely rugged laptops that last for hours without charging, and you can see them outside in the bright sun, and you could probably throw them off a cliff and they'd still work. But anyways, this site, they've got about 200 laptops, yeah, from one laptop per child, and that was from the results of a couple Baylor students who actually wrote a grant, and so that just shows you, like, I mean, they didn't even have to be there and they got involved. So there's so many things we can do. We can learn about the Pocat people. We can learn about Kenya. I wish I could say there's books and a lot of stuff online, but there's really not. I mean, there's a limited amount of information, but we can go there and we can tell stories to each other, and we can just continue to be involved and come up with new creative ways to be involved. I'm hoping that, you know, next year there'll be another team sent or more teams in the future going, and I just encourage you to you know, look into that or talk to us if you have questions about it. Come to Ubuntu if you want to hear more. And I think that's a good start.
Pastor Edward, how about closing comments about just connection points, what I mean, yeah, the importance of the relationship that mm-hmm. Jacob's Well has had with City Harvest, yeah, and Pocat.
Yeah, one of the things that I would really encourage, and I just want to highlight two things, is the whole ministry of presence. It's about you being present. The Lord would not allow you to go 9,000 miles away and not use you. It's so life-transforming when you come, when you visit. Because like I've said before, Africans are oral people. So, and oral requires that you make the physical contact and communication. And so that transformation is very powerful. And so I would encourage, you know, that we continue the visit. You know, if we can have short-term people coming on short-term basis, even long-term basis, and once we set up a base in Pocat, we would love for you to come and volunteer and teach. And, you know, if you are nurses, please come and serve the community. I think there is a great need for each and every one of us to play a role and just to be available to be used of God. Even if you came and you are not a preacher, you didn't need to say anything. Your presence alone, you know, would be of use in God's hand to change people's lives. We've seen that happen 3 years ago when the team first came to Nairobi, and then we went to Pocat. We put them up in groups of, 10, you know, of mothers living with HIV and AIDS. And I remember two incidences that happened that time. in one group, there was one of the ladies had a child who had a hole in her heart. And as she sat in one of the groups, they prayed together, and I think Tim was in that group. And you know what? Out of that, this child had surgery, and now she's living a normal life. You know, then the next group also, there was a lady who had just gotten married and she was barren, but she was HIV positive. And in her heart and in her faith, she was praying to have a baby. And so she had shared with me and, you know, as a team of, you know, counselors, and we had said, you know, I don't think it's a good idea for her to have a baby because the baby will also be HIV AIDS. And so why have all these two problems? I mean, she's a problem in herself, so she'd better just stay like that. But she shared the same request in the group again, and they prayed for her. And she has a baby now. I think the baby is probably 2-3 years old, and the baby is HIV and AIDS negative. So the baby doesn't have HIV and AIDS. And so, you know, it's amazing what God does when we take steps of faith and go out there just to allow ourselves to be used of Him. You know, God has accomplished so much more than what we would have accomplished even if we had the resources to do so, just because of those visits. And I would really encourage that that continues. Then, of course, secondly, I would add that you pray with us and support us to at least be able to make Pokot livable so that when people travel there, they can actually find that they can stay there on a longer basis to be able to serve. Because presently, it is really harsh and hard for anyone who wants to be there for an extended time. And some of us, when I used to go there initially, I would actually go without food and, you know, survive on water and just be like them, you know, go for days without food because they hardly have food. You know, they rely on relief food, and when it doesn't come, they have to live on, you know, for 3-4 days without any food at all. So, and when you do that, you're living in a tent, you're sleeping in a tent, it's hot, it's dry, it's hard for everybody. So putting up facilities that can accommodate and that have basic, you know, things that can make somebody at least stay there for long would be a great thing to have in that area. Yeah, thank you.
Can we just thank the team again for going and